welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you, as we have an adventure together and you get on top of my shoulders and we put a big overcoat over us so we look like a giant, and then we scare the palace guard so we can get inside and rescue the princess. And you say, oh, that's from Princess Bride. But I gotta tell you, Shemp did it first. Pass the butter.
Hey, you need to go easy on that. You have high cholesterol.
Oh, I'm not gonna eat it.
Then why'd you ask for it?
I'm practicing my English.
But you already know English.
Just because you know something doesn't mean you don't have to practice. Concert pianists practice.
My doctor practices.
Practice makes perfect.
It's pronounced perfect.
See? Now, will you please relocate the mayonnaise to my vicinity that I may partake of it?
Oh, very good.
No, really, I want the mayonnaise.
Oh, sorry, here.
Man, will you look at this? Unbelievable.
Baltimore is wanted for a crime.
No, this thing about area rugs being sold at factory prices. They're probably really thin and cheap.
Let me see that. Hans Darn, also known as the Baron of Baltimore, is wanted for fraud.
Fraud? That seems kind of obvious.
Apparently, he's been bilking old ladies out of money, claiming to need the funds to repair a time machine.
Could he be talking about our time machine?
Maybe. It's definitely in need of repair.
Yeah, what happened exactly?
Oh, I stupidly updated the operating system and now the peripherals don't work. You can't set the date or steer the thing. And the part we need is really expensive. So it's grounded until we can get the funds.
So maybe he wasn't lying.
But why would Baltimore care if the time machine works?
Oh, you've got to save me, boys. I'm on the lam.
Well, get off of the lam. Poor lam.
No, I mean I'm on the run from the cops.
We know, but why'd you come here? And did you really cheat old ladies?
First, they weren't that old. That's very insulting to the girls. 80 is hardly old nowadays. But no, of course I didn't cheat them. I need to use your time machine desperately, so I was raising funds to get the replacement time jibulator.
Well, what do you want us to do? You can't use the secret room. That's for hiding people persecuted for their ethnicity or religious beliefs.
Just let me use the time machine.
Hans, it doesn't work.
It will now. Here.
A time jibulator. Where did you get it?
B&H.
Oh, did my man Shlomo set you up?
Believe me, it was no bargain. But at least they had one.
Why are you so eager to use the time machine?
I need to contact my ancestors. Listen. No one believes me that I'm royalty, and that's how I was raised. But now I'm beginning to doubt myself. I have to find my great-great-grandfather and settle this question once and for all. Who am I?
An apple.
What?
Oh, I thought it was a riddle. My second guess was a potato.
Will you help me, Hardy?
I'm not going to let you use the time machine by yourself, but we'll take you where you want to go. I still don't know how you're going to clear this up with the police.
One life-ruining crisis at a time. Now let's go before the cops arrive.
Please pass the butter.
My, your English is getting good.
Why, thank you, my goodest sir. Man, why does this time machine smell like camphor?
Oh, that's me. It's this stupid new cologne, Grandma's Closet.
I like it. It reminds me of your grandma's closet.
Man, this thing is so rickety, I get nervous every time we use it.
It's definitely in need of some sprucing up, but it'll get the job done. Now, where are we going?
I have no idea.
I thought we were going to meet your great-great-grandfather.
I just meant it in the general sense. I need to return to my ancestors.
Let me wiki this dilemma. It says here the title became extinct at the end of the 18th century, but the descendants have used the title since then. Can you give me your ancestor's name?
His name was Posthumus Ringdon Calvert.
That's not a real name.
I swear that's my ancestor. He might have been the first one to come to Maryland from the old country.
Ringdon?
Don't mock people's names. That's so...
D-class A?
No. That means fallen in social status. Like my family. His name is Posthumus Ringdon Calvert, and I have no idea where he lived.
Let me punch his name into the database. I'll be. He's a real person.
Apologies.
None taken.
Says here he lived in Baltimore, Maryland in the late 19th century.
That's sort of general. Do we have an address?
No.
Well, I'll tell you what. We can find out when we get there. I'll just set it for my friend Cadwallader Ringgold's house.
You really are making these names up.
No, he's a famous Navy guy. Unfortunately, his association with me lost him his job. He was declared insane for insisting that he was being visited from the future by an annoying old man who spoke to people across the globe using only the air.
He sounds crazy.
Lou, he was talking about me.
Oh, radio and time travel sounds so crazy when you put it that way.
All right, everybody, strap in.
This lamb's wool cover on this seatbelt smells nasty. Did it get wet?
Enough complaining. Hang on.
Oh, man, I never get used to this. I feel so sick.
Here's a grocery bag in case you need to puke. Oh, whoops, that one's full.
Oh, you're making me sicker.
Are we there yet? Is the new part working?
Well, it's being a little weird, but it's working.
Anyone want to sing to pass the time?
Sure.
Oh.
We're here.
Wow, what a lovely house. So dark and butch.
What?
No, I mean it's sort of excessively manly. Like the whole house is a den.
Is that an animal head?
I think it's a lamp.
Smells like Latakia pipe tobacco and old.
Cad, you here? Cad? He might be at sea. I'm not sure what year it is.
Hey, I see Cad left the non-dairy creamer. Think I'll give it a whirl.
That's not creamer. That's a funerary urn.
Oh, I can't have any then. I'm human ash intolerant.
Stop touching things. First, let's go borrow some clothes so we can walk around the 19th century without looking out of place.
How is a blue blazer ever out of place?
You look like you're going to a regional frat meeting.
Maybe I am. I'm in Gimel Dalit Hay. You know that.
Very funny. I'll do the Jewish jokes, please.
Here, put this on.
I love these clothes so much.
You...
What's wrong, Butchie?
I'm allergic to wool.
Oh, no. Are we ever going to find my ancestor? Just be patient. What if I am a fraud? What if my whole life has been a lie? My parents lied to me and I'm merely ordinary.
Oh, what a tragedy. You'd be like me and all the lowly folks.
Exactly. What a nightmare.
Well, this will be settled soon enough. Let's go.
Whoa, watch out for the carriages.
So how do we find my ancestor?
Well, we walk around and let's start at the public house. That looks like a good place.
I hope I remember how to speak 19th century English.
Hello, my good sir. Good day. My companions and I wish to partake of some repast. Are you from England? Why do you ask? You talk weird.
Could we get a few pints of ale, please?
Coming right up.
This is kind of a fancy place.
So you think they know my ancestor here?
Well, it's hard to say.
I'm kind of hungry. Do they have food in the 1860s?
I'm pretty sure.
What kind?
Jalapeno poppers?
I don't think so.
Loaded potato skins?
I think you're thinking of the 1980s.
I don't know. I'm getting a Fern Bar vibe here.
It's those pictures. They look like the decor in those restaurants that are made to look like you're eating in your grandmother's attic.
Nothing finer than attic dining. The table should be old steamer trunks.
Filled with horrible family secrets.
So when do we ask about old granddad?
I'll ask the waiter. Excuse me. We have traveled from Pittsburgh.
Oh, I knew it. Oil people.
Yes. Well, we're looking for a Mr. Calvert. Posthumous Ring-Dong Calvert.
It's Ring-Don.
You mean Lord Baltimore?
Yes, that's him.
Are you relatives?
Why, yes, I am.
Oh, then you could probably get in to see him during visiting hours.
Visiting hours? What do you mean?
He's at Spring Grove.
Oh, is that a resort?
It's a last resort.
What are you getting at, laughing boy?
He's at the hospital for the insane, just down the road.
Insane?
Yes, because of his insanity. Also, he's insane.
Well, that can't be.
Is there anything else I can get you?
No, I think we're done here. Insane asylum.
I'm sorry, Hans.
He was crazy.
Well, maybe not. Maybe they just thought he was. Maybe he was ahead of his time.
They thought Poe was crazy.
True.
Although he was. And it was probably the booze. Maybe your grandpa's just a hardcore alcoholic who drank his way to insanity.
Either way, I had no idea. I thought I was from noble stock.
Nobility had problems too, man. Look at Chateaubriand. His life was full of ups and downs.
That's an actual guy? I thought it was a stake.
Yeah, it's a guy. Don't you read?
Not so much.
Well, let's visit the hospital and meet your grandpa.
Isn't that dangerous? Paradoxes and everything?
Well, the worst thing that's ever happened is that I've been responsible for people being sent away for insanity after meeting me. But in this case, he's already insane, so I think we're good.
Well, how are we going to pay?
What? The tab. We just drank a bunch of ale.
Oh, dang it. Well, one of us should stay here until we get some money.
Oh, great. Who?
Oh, I'll stay. I hate hospitals. Thanks, Butchie. Well, don't forget me like you did Don that time. I'm not a big fan of the 19th century.
Okay, we won't.
Wow, this looks like an old haunted mental hospital, except it's a new haunted mental hospital.
How do you propose we get in?
I have a plan. Follow me. Hello, yes. I'm Dr. White from Pittsburgh.
Good afternoon, Dr. White.
Good afternoon. These are my colleagues, Doctors Register and Darn.
Gentlemen.
Who came in?
Lou, cut it out.
Sorry.
We have been asked to come observe one of your patients, a Mr. Calvert.
Oh, yes, Lord Calvert.
Lord Calvert, like the Canadian whiskey?
Lou? Yes, P.R. Calvert.
That's him. He's in room 222.
Is Karen Valentine in it with him?
Lou?
Sorry. This is all too good. Psychiatric hospitals have the best straight men.
What do we say when we see him?
Well, just keep in character. We are three doctors from Pittsburgh.
Dr. Howard, Dr. Fine, and Dr. Howard.
No, Lou, I already gave our names.
I'm just trying to have some fun. Man, there's a powerful urine smell.
I know.
You don't get that from the old pictures.
And there's some other nasty smell, something astringent.
It's definitely an odd-smelling place.
Psst. Hardy, you spraying something?
No.
Psst. Are you sure you're not spraying Glade to cover the smell?
No.
Psst.
Over here.
Oh, hello, sir.
Are you doctors?
Yes.
Come in here, before they see you.
Before who sees us?
The critics.
The what?
The critics. They're everywhere.
Oh, I know. Everybody's a critic.
This guy gets it.
Who are you, sir?
I'm a playwright. The name's Smith.
Oh, that's a name I've heard of.
Well, I'm a different one. No one's heard of me. That's the way I like it. See, my plays are entirely in my head.
Okay.
But they're still trying to get them out, so they can criticize them. That's all they do.
Well, your plays are safe with us, sir, but we have rounds to make.
Wait. I feel the need to tell you about my play.
Oh, and after that, please tell us about your long, weird dream. I'm sure it's intriguing.
I'm writing a play about a man who travels through time.
Oh, I wouldn't.
Why?
It's sort of really kind of old.
Yeah, it's sort of been done to death. It's probably the worst device you can use in fiction. It's for the lazy and unimaginative.
Hey, come on now. Cut the guy some slack.
This play is different, though.
How so?
It just is. You aren't critics, are you? You sound like critics.
No. Look, it's your play. Do what you will.
I will.
Good.
Good.
Can we go now?
No, wait. What if I told you there were time travelers here in this hospital?
I would be unfazed.
Because it's a mental hospital, right? I get that. These are the things I struggle with. Expectations. Everyone thinks they know what's coming, but they don't.
Well, that's very true.
These time travelers are dressed as doctors. But what they are really here for is to find the ancestor of one of them and try to discover their own identity by discovering their origins.
Well, that sounds plausible.
What they don't know is when they find him...
Cut it out. You're spoiling it. Listen, that sounds great. Why not just take a chance and write it down? Originality is overrated. Follow your heart.
Maybe I will, Doctor. Or should I say, Lou?
Hey, how do you know my name?
You'll never know. Let's just say I'm a loyal listener.
Man, I'm creeped out. Let's go.
We must have already screwed up time by being here. I'm telling you, I have this problem every time.
Time travel creates madness.
Yep.
And time travel is a metaphor for self-examination.
Lou?
I'm sorry, but nobody heard that. Let's go.
Here's the room. Do you want to go in alone, Hans, or should we go in with you?
Could you come with me? I'm a little apprehensive.
Sure. Hello? Anyone here?
I'm here. I'm not just anyone, though.
Mr. Calvert? Lord Calvert, please. Or Lord Baltimore, or Baron, or just Baltimore.
Who am I having the pleasure of not recognizing? We are doctors from Pittsburgh.
You don't look like doctors.
You look like you raided a commodore's closet. Never mind our attire. We are here to ask a few questions of you.
Oh, delightful. Let me answer them before you ask. I am not insane. I am indeed a baron. And one of you here looks exactly like my daughter.
Maybe we're related.
No, not you. The fat one who looks like a laborer.
Oh, thanks a bunch.
Sir, why are you in this hospital? I am in the hospital because I am considered crazy. You see, I am in fact nobody. I have no money or title for that matter. My family used to have a farm, but we lost that and I was thrust into abject poverty. What little respect I had dried up completely and I was suddenly a pariah. It was then I realized that I must make a statement about the twisted views of society. So I paraded around the streets in tattered clothes, calling myself the Baron of Baltimore. You see, a title is an indication of authority over others. But who has the right to grant that authority? Why would the circumstances of your birth make a man my superior? Why are we impressed with unearned wealth and status, or even earned wealth, for that matter? I am a human being, and by my sheer existence I am noble. And for the fact that I survived this great hardship and indignity, and yet am still here, why, that makes me the Baron of Baltimore.
Wow, you're cool. So you're not a real baron.
Hans, did you not get his point? Also, I know who you really are, because I'm a friend of Commodore Ringgold, and he's here too, by the way. You're from the future, aren't you? And I bet the fat one is my descendant.
Actually, it's me.
Oh, dear.
Look, I've been operating under the mistaken impression I'm nobility.
Well, this must be a great relief to you. You are, in fact, an ordinary person. And if you want to be judged by your character, start having some instead of depending on labels and unearned privilege. You are now free to be yourself.
I can't tell you what a pleasure it is to meet you, sir.
The pleasure is all mine. But I have one question.
What's that?
In the future, you are no longer plagued by authoritarianism, and all men, no matter their race or sexual preference or beliefs, are treated with respect and dignity.
Oh, yeah. Yeah!
I'm kidding. I know it's still awful. Now go and do something to change that.
Thank you, great-great-grandfather.
You're very welcome, Baron.
Man, it feels good to be back home. What about my legal troubles?
Well, I put in a call to a friend at the station and explained everything. You're in the clear.
Thanks, Hardy. And thank you, Lou, for your help.
No problem, Balty.
And you too, Butchie.
Butchie? Where's Butchie?
Oh, no.
Oh, man, he's gonna kill us if he weren't probably already dead.
I'm still gonna kill you guys.
Butchie, how did you get here?
I didn't. I'm not that Butchie. I'm Butchie's great-great-great-grandson. Turns out my origin is a bit of a paradox, and I never existed until we went back in time to Baltimore.
So in a way, you are our Butchie.
Yeah, but don't do that again. It makes a guy feel unwanted.
Sorry, man. You're not unwanted. You guys are the best. I'm so glad you're my friends. And you know what? You're all royalty to me.
I know! I can't believe how much better things are.
You mean better?
I guess my English still needs a little practice.
Oh, Lou.
Diogenes lived in a tub. Diogenes lived in a tub. Pooped in the theater, ate his breakfast in the square. Lived like a dog, Diogenes. Solo.
Don't do that so well. The Greek philosopher Diogenes lived in a tub. Now, it wasn't the kind of bathtub that we know nowadays. It was more like a big ceramic overturned hot tub. And he lived in there in the square, and sometimes he'd live in there naked. And people would come by and they'd say, there's the philosopher Diogenes. Diogenes, you shouldn't have majored in philosophy. Look what it got you. And then he'd throw his poop at him and they'd say, oh my gosh, he even got a graduate degree in philosophy.
You know, appearances are strange. When I was in school, I used to befriend children that I thought were friendless, were kind of awkward and nobody liked. And One time I befriended this kid, and he said, well, maybe we should do something on the weekend. I said, all right. So he called me up, and he said, we'd like to take you to McDonald's. And I said, all right. And so he pulled up, but it wasn't his parents' car, pulled up in a chauffeur-driven limousine. And I had no idea, but this child was from a very wealthy family. His father had invented some machine or something, and they were millionaires, mega millionaires or whatever back then. I can't remember what people were. And so we got in this limousine, and we went through the drive-in at McDonald's in a limousine. And I was so not impressed. Why was I not impressed? Well, it wasn't that child's limousine. It was his father's limousine, and his father was very elderly. And all. And so the child had accomplished nothing. He was still smelly and unlikable. But people looked at this and they thought we were somebody just by appearances. How about that? They had no idea that I was nobody and the person I was with smelled vaguely of pee. Now, what is the point you're getting to here, Hardy? Oh, appearances. The problem Diogenes had with people was that they were so phony. Everybody was impressed by status or dress or something like that. I've never been somebody who dressed very well. Why is that? Even when I get a suit, it is ill-fitting because of my shape. Now, look, I was just watching the 007 movie. I said, look at that man, how good he looks in them slim trousers. They're so tight. Now, see, that's not possible for me because I'm not shaped that way. You understand? I have a large belly. I never used to have it. I just look down and go, oh, my goodness, how did that happen? But now I have a large vat of oleo or something that I keep around my waist. It's like an internal fanny pack filled with who knows what, Kleenex, pudding, all sorts of things. And so I'm not shaped correctly. So to get clothes that are comfortable, I sort of go for the baggy, frumpy look. And I always look like my head sticking out of a tent or something like that. The opposite of a camel. They always say, do not let the camel stick his nose under the tent. Why? They spit. They spit, and he'll spit at you through the tent. So what I do is I take some of that low, I guess it's for keeping critters out of your garden, wire, and I put it around my tent. And then I forget about it, and I go out, and I get my feet tangled in it, and then they're a bloody mess. Look at that. Oh, sometimes the devices we use to keep out the bad stuff turn against us, don't they? Like alarms. My mother's always had a security alarm on her house, and it is, I don't know how many times it has successfully apprehended myself or my mother or a critter or something like that. Now, of course, we don't know all the times that it's kept burglars out, but it certainly has kept me out a number of times, and it's always wonderful greeting the police. That's been mostly my encounter with the police, has been people's alarms going off by mistake. They put me on the list, too, say, if in case my alarm goes off while I'm out of town, call Hardy. So what am I supposed to do? I just go over there, and the police meet me, and then they shoot me, depending on what I'm wearing. I'm fascinated, and I've mentioned, I think, the last few shows, the story of the prince and the pauper. Now, there's a prince and a pauper. They change clothes. Do I need to explain, or have you all heard this as a child? No, Hardy. Well, go ahead. I'm going to pause for a minute. You go ahead and read that. Now, with the internet, you don't even have to go to the library, do you, to look something up. Back in the day, you get something in your head, say, I wonder who this historical figure is, like Cadwallader Ringgold, and you'd have to go to the library. And by the time you got to the library, you'd forget about it and say, what am I here for? Oh, that's right, that picture book of naked people. So I'll tell you what I'm trying to say is that appearances certainly do not matter because, but they do. So if you're wearing rags, someone thinks that you have no influence, that you're poor, that you're nothing, and they're not going to be impressed by you. Or, you know, you walk into a restaurant, they say, I'm sorry, sir, you can't come in here. Why? Because you're a tire. I'm not a tire, I'm a human being. And they say, no, because of what you're wearing. I say, this old thing? They go, yes, that old thing. You can't wear that in there. You have to look nice. You have a jacket on or something. I remember going places as a youth. And I'd go with my grandparents. They'd all be dressed up, and I'd be in
children clothes, and they'd say, the young man needs a blazer. Are you serious? It's a child. Really, I need a blazer. What's that going to mean?
He must be a real estate mogul, that 8-year-old.
Why would the child, and if somebody's eating really disrupted by the fact that I am not wearing a sports coat? That's always disturbed me. I can't enjoy, I'm choking on this amused boosh. My boosh is not amused because that child over there has no collar on his shirt. And we really are bothered by things like that. I have a nightmare where I'm somewhere and I've got rags on and I don't have any identification or any money. And then how do you let people know that you have special privilege? And how do you know that I'm special? Say, look, no, I come from a good family. You have to let me in. Don't you know who I am?
No, you just look like an ordinary bum to me. But I'm not.
A lot of people say, well, I'll still have my education and my articulateness. Well, then you just seem like those characters from Huck Finn.
Don't you see I am the Dauphin? I'm the second in line to the throne of France.
Nobody believes you. They think you're full of garbage because you're not wearing fancy clothes, because you don't have some indication that you're special. And that's how we evaluate everybody. Somebody walking down the street say, uh-oh. Now, what if people robbed you in tuxedos? What if people robbed you in $10,000 suits?
Guess what? They do.
They do. Yes, they do. They do rob you in $10,000. You just don't see them doing it. So I tell you, character has nothing to do with whether you're wearing an Argani suit or whether you're wearing rags. And even some, I'll tell you, what I hate to see is when a CEO of a famous company say, I'm just going to wear a t-shirt and jeans just like ordinary people. You're not ordinary people. Give all your damn money away. Then you're ordinary people. You're not ordinary people because everybody recognizes your face because you're famous. That's another thing. So you got a famous face, everybody say it doesn't matter. So you can slum it all you want. I have to wear certain clothes because there's certain places I have a long white beard. And my long white beard says, you may have fought in the war, but now you're an alcoholic. And that's not what I mean. I say, don't I look like I'm doing a one-man show of Charles Darwin? No, you just look like you just came out of the swamp. Oh, my friends, we don't want people to judge us, but we judge. And it's almost impossible not to do because we have already, in our culture, wedded status to things, to appearances. And Diogenes would have none of that. He says, how's somebody going to have authority over me? He got in trouble. He used to work for his father, kind of a banker, but they defaced the currency. Because what is that currency? What is that? I can't have an apple because I don't have a piece of metal. I can't have food because I don't have a little piece of paper. It says,
well, you got to work for it.
Why is that? I'll tell you what. My great-grandfather, bless his heart, never existed, used to tell me this story. He'd say, once there was a beautiful valley, and in the valley was a beautiful apple tree, and it was larger than any apple trees we have today. It was enormous. And at the foot of this apple tree lived people, and they were called the people. And they lived in semi-harmony. And they would share the apples. There was enough food for everybody. They'd have to work out rules and everything because some people, like, there's one guy called Gluttony Chubby Fat Fat, and he's like, I want all of them. So, no, now, come on, we got to ration them a little. So they had rules, and they did have, they'd alternate who would be a leader and everything, but they basically shared the apples, and everybody was taken care of. Then one day, a chief from the other side of the hill from a tribe called the Other People came, and he said to the current apple executive, he said, you know what, what if I gave you a beautiful bride, and in exchange, you give me the apple tree? He said, I can't give you the apple tree. That's how we sustain our life here. He said, I'm not going to take it anywhere. I can't take it, uproot it. I mean, it's just sort of in name only. I'll be in charge of it. You won't have to worry about it. I know you got some fights and infighting. I'll just be the one who administers the apple tree. And then you get this beautiful bride. And the chief said, all right. So the next day the people came to get their apples, and there's a fence around the apple tree. And they said, come on now, we want to get the apples. Oh, because one at a time, you're going to get the apple. First, you got to give me something. So give you what? I don't know. People said, well, we don't have anything. So, that might be a problem. So, well, how are we going to get our apples? He said, well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you all, some of you, come over to our village and you build our houses. And you build a house, and for every house you build, I'll give you an apple. I said, well, that's not very much. That only feeds one of you. So, well, you're going to have to build a lot of houses, I guess. And so the people journeyed over the hill, and they started building houses for the other people to get their apples. And then they found that they really couldn't ever go home again and get their apples because they were stuck there building houses. And this went on for generations, and they just became the people who build houses. And the other people became those who control the apples. And they would let them have some a little bit at a time. Oh, my goodness, and they longed for the time they could just have the apples. Why didn't we continue to cooperate? Why did we feel the need to set someone in authority over us? Why? Oh, why? Now this, you say, oh, this sounds like you're making a political statement. Everything is a political statement, my friend. Oh, we didn't agree on this system. We're just born into it, right? And it's not going to change probably anytime soon. So how do we... Oh, sometimes my voice gets so low, it disappears. And sometimes I get so low, I disappear. I feel like I'm going to just turn into water and ooze out under the doors. And there won't be me anymore. I get so discouraged. I see people and I say, oh, I can't help everybody. I can't even help myself. And then I look at myself and I think, oh, I'm just running away half the time. I'm so scared I can't do anything. I'm ashamed of myself and I hide beneath my covers. Now, it's not so bad hiding beneath my covers. I like my internal life. I have a good deal of fun in there. Oh, I write all sorts of plays in my head. I write all sorts of fictions. A lot of times people say, how do you think off the top of your head? I don't think off the top of it. There's nothing there. As you can plainly see, I'm very bald. I think inside my head, and inside my head is a little village. Oh, yes, I picture it all. I picture everything before I see it. I see it visually, and then I say it. I have little houses. I have little ponds. I have roads. I have high-rise buildings. I have tents. I have caves. I spend a lot of time in the caves. And on the walls of the caves are pictures. And the pictures remind me of things that have happened. And all I have to do is go back into that cave and I can see the pictures. I can see the limousine driving me to McDonald's with that rich kid with the odor. I can see all that because it remains in my brain. Oh, all of us in our heads have the Library of Alexandria. The Library of Alexandria was destroyed and had all the great writings in it. And here's the thing. The Library of Alexandria is destroyed every day, every time a human being dies. Every time a human being dies, they take with them all the memories and all that experience. It just disappears. How does anything stay in the world at all? What is our inheritance? Is our inheritance a barony? Am I a duke? Am I a lord? Oh, my inheritance is deeper. My title comes from the ideas of my ancestors. And you know what? A lot of times they're not even my blood ancestors. I did a little genealogy once, and I found out who my ancestors were. And you know what? It was meaningless to me, because I realized that my grandparents didn't know who these people were, necessarily. Certain things were passed down, certain values. And so I got a little insight into where some of our more messed up values came from. Why do I always feel the need to dress up or present myself in a certain way? Why do I feel that need to make up for my insufficiencies with appearance? Oh, and I saw that in my ancestry. But I also saw in my background that I was related to hundreds, thousands of people. They were all my ancestors. The farther back you go, there's more people. Until you're related to a crowd. And so your grandparents aren't just grandparents, they're a whole group of people, aren't they? And you inherit ideas from everywhere. So all men and women are my grandparents, my ancestors. And all my cousins were all related. Oh, I don't know how we got all separated. It must be some illusion. It must be something we did on purpose. Oh, Diogenes, how do we live differently? So Diogenes says, I'm living like a dog. Don't you love dogs? I've got two dogs. My one dog's name's Orwell, and he's named after George Orwell. Why George Orwell? I like George Orwell's writings, and I've read everything he's written.
Oh, you like 1984 and all?
You know what? Not my favorite. Not my favorite. But I like all his essays and all his novels that have a little more realistic. Because I don't think you don't have to make up an allegorical tale for him of George Orwell. No siree. All you have to do is tell me about your experiences on the streets of London. All you have to do is tell me the experience of being a poor person in Paris. And that tells me more than I have ever need to know about some fantasy of some dystopian future. Oh, Lord, tell me about washing dishes in the deepest basement of a Paris restaurant. Tell me how awful that is, and I will see more about humanity than any fiction. Oh, Lord, George Orwell is my dog. My other dog's name is Cookie. Cookie's named after cookies. Oh, and I don't know what kind of dog Cookie is, but I suspect Cookie is a combination of a small terrier and a Rottweiler. You say, what's that look like? Horrible. Oh, it's a misshapen, strange-looking dog. She's got big shoulders, but she's got the tiniest little head like a grapefruit. It's the silliest thing. And if she had just sticked her head through a hole in the wall, you'd say, oh, look at that little terrier. And they go, where's the rest of that body come from? Cookie is a mess. Who knows who Cookie's ancestors are, but I'm sure that her parents did not hook up by mutual agreement. Let's just say that. By the way, Orwell is a hound. He must be part beagle, and I think he's part coon dog. Walker, coon, train, walker. That's a hard one. But anyway, and he's, bless his heart, he's fat. But Cookie, oh, she's so exuberant, and she's the one who wants all the love and everything. She thinks she's a little puppy. She doesn't know who she is. And she greets everybody the same with warm exuberance. And Orwell greets everybody the same with the anticipation of food. Cookie will give you kisses. Orwell won't, but he'll smell your eye. He likes to sniff eyes. I don't know what's going on there. I don't really want to know. But he's being himself. Now, Cookie also occasionally eat a little poo. They say, oh, that's disgusting. Look, let me tell you something. Oh, what a mess life is. Have you ever seen it in its beginnings? It's covered with goo. Babies, ooh, what a messy thing. They come out all smeared up with something. I don't know what it is. Blood and mayonnaise. Who knows? Oh, my goodness. That is Trafe, by the way. Don't, I think. They're a mess, you know? And then they grow up, and then they're a teenager, and then they're a mess. And then you see people at the end of life, also incredibly messy. And the last thing we do as we go out is mess ourselves. Oh, yes. Yes, we do. That's our parting. That's our last comment. The last thing we ever say. Was there's two things we ever say. And if you ever been on deathbed, the basically last things you ever say are that's it. That's the punctuation. It's like Victor Borger wrote your final words. Everybody should have that on their tombstone. That's it. That's the end. Exclamation point, perhaps. Who knows? Now, a lot of times I believe that the end of life is really a semicolon. That is, the sentence is ended, but there's another sentence that's linked to it forever. That's your legacy. That's the other side of the semicolon. I think on the flip side of every tombstone should be a mirror. So you read the front and say, here lies Uncle Fred. He had terrible cancer. Then you go around to the, also it's a piano, he liked piano too. Forgot to mention that. We were so consumed with the end of his life, we forgot he was very good at piano and he liked to cook and everything. But it was the end leaves the expression. Then you go back to the other side of the gravestone and there's a mirror. And you get to look at yourself. And you move around and you say, I'm still alive. I can still change things.
And with every generation, we believe we're going to change things, and the only thing we change are our underwear. The only thing we change is into a different suit of clothes. Why can't anybody ever change things? Oh, we mock Diogenes for living in a tub, but he was the wisest man around. People came from all over to consult with him. Alexander the Great came to see him, and he said something like, "Oh, I'm so impressed, Alexander the Great." And you know what? They're both dead now. They're both dead, and I'm sure Diogenes gets as many wiki hits as Alexander the Great. Their empires right now, Alexander's and Diogenes, are the same size. Zero. Oh, my goodness. Would you rather be remembered as a dog? For all the things that my dog has done, all the bacon stealing, all the trash can tipping over, you know, all those things, I forgive them. I forgive old Orwell. I forgive old Cookie. I forgive both of them, because every time they see me, unconditional love and companionship. Why? Is it because they have special insight into my soul? No, it's because they know we live all together and we need one another. That's what they know. And they know from sniffing around, no matter how much I hide it, I have a butthole. They know that because they can smell it through my clothes. I pretend it's not there. Everybody walks around as if they were an angel dressed in robes of light. But let me tell you, you stinky fool. Let me tell you, you nasty, misshapen thing. You're beautiful. You're beautiful. And we need to accept that with ourselves and others. A little bit of it starts at home, and then some of it, we got to start it outside of ourselves. What are you, Hardy? Oh, I literally am nobody. That's so wonderful. I feel so liberated because of it. Now, I do not live in a tub, but if I had a tub, like a regular bathtub, I would live in it occasionally because I like a good soak. Who doesn't? But I tell you what is an interesting. I don't know if you've ever been submerged in a submersion baptism. Hear me out. I'm not religious, Artie. No. I'm just using this as an experience. You don't have to be. Let's pretend. Here's the thing. We're not in a church. We're in a religion class, let's say. Everybody, welcome. Hello. My name is Professor Hardy White. I'm completely unqualified to be here. I'm a complete and utter charlatan. I have just wandered into this classroom after tying up the actual professor and like to talk to you about something. I would like to talk to you about the tradition of submersion baptism, including the Jewish practice of being submersed in a mikveh. What is a mikveh? Well, a mikveh is a big tub that hasn't been overturned. It's a big thing of water, and you can go down in it. Now, they've been around. I've been in a middle-aged mikveh. I mean, not a working one. Saw it, you know, in Montpellier, France. Man, I've seen modern mikvehs in a conservative synagogue in Orlando. I've seen them all. I have interest in these things. You know that. I have interest in people's traditions and in their religious traditions and in mysticism. Why? Because I'm curious. Why? Because I'm curious. Why? Because I'm curious. And so people like to submerge themselves in water because they long for a rebirth. I want to go in and I want to float as if I am in the womb in this warm water. And then I want to come back out again, a new person. Oh, don't we love that? We always want to be a new person. But you know what? I already been in the womb. I was in the womb once. I swear to you, I was. And I come out of it covered with mayonnaise and blood. And I shot out of it. And that was fine. I say, now I'm a person. I said, don't you want to be renewed, be a new person? Why? I like my old person. Look at this. It's just getting worn in. It's just like an old leather bomber jacket. I like all the wrinkles and the patches in it. Every time something happens like that, you take a new person to the antique roadshow, and they say, has this one been submerged in a mikveh, or have this one has baptism? Because I could see you've taken all the patina off. Now I can't see how old it is. It's going to be, you keep renewing, and you won't ever gain any wrinkles, any age. I got some kind of crust on me now, says all the things I've been through. Yes, it does. And I like that just fine. And I like to carry my mistakes. I carry them around on my back.
I open up my coat, and I've got all these little demon children hanging on there like they're fake Rolex watches. And I say, look at all my mistakes of the past. Isn't that silly? Look what I've done. I'm a person. Look at me with all my imperfections. I can't control my impulses half the time. Oh, I do things that are horrible, and as horrible as you do things, and yes, things are horrible, and you must admit when you have done things that are awful, when you have sinned against another person, admit it and redeem yourself. Change. Don't run away from it. Say, I have done this thing. I have learned. I am not going to erase all these marks on the wall. You are in a cell, and you're making these hash marks of how long you've been there. And if you erase the hash marks, it doesn't erase how long you've been there. It just means you're going to lose track of how long you've been there and what happened. So keep it around. Live with your mistakes. Live with your blemishes. Let yourself grow old. So I need to get to the doctor. I'm a famous person, and everybody thinks I was in a TV show when I was 25, and now I got to go back and make the TV show. They want to remake it. I'm 50, so I'm going to go to the doctor, and they're going to take my face off, and they're going to tighten it up, and I'm going to look like I'm 25 because people are not supposed to age. People won't love me if they think I've gotten older. Oh, no, they're just going to think you're some kind of alien or something. You don't need to do that. Oh, my goodness, you're beautiful. Can't you see? Can't you see? Everybody doesn't trust their lovability. You don't trust your lovability because you're judging others. You don't trust your lovability because you don't love others unconditionally either. You know? So you're saying, oh, if somebody sees that maybe I don't have no talent, they're not going to love me. So I got to get out there and I got to be the best, or I'm not going to get that love. And let me talk to you, those of you who have taken that route in life. Say, I've become a performer. I've become a famous person. And I've got this persona. And people come up to me at performances after the show, say, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. And you go, yeah. You know, and then you think, well, they don't know me. What have I done? What have I done? I'm just a picture. I'll tell you what. If Ulysses S. Grant was walking down the street, people say, hey, I love your money. I know you from money. Yeah, money man, $50 man, 50 man, like that. Benjamin Franklin, same thing. Hey, $100 bill man, cut man. So don't you know me for who I am? Say, Benjamin Franklin, say, I love other things, like orgies and speaking French. But no, that's not what you remember. All you remember is these things, these appearances, because I've lifted myself up and I've made myself an authority over other men, other women, other children. I've put myself ahead of them. I've made myself their leader to make myself feel better. But what have I done now? Oh, my goodness, I don't have to have authority over anybody else. I don't mind just being another person. And sometimes, I'm just as guilty of depending on appearances and all these things I say. I'm not Diogenes. I'm not living in a tub. I'm trying to change too. I'm talking to myself as much as I'm talking to you. I constantly have internal debates with myself about, what should my worldview be? There are always candidates in my mind that are vying for the position of leading my worldview. Old cynicism, he's in there. Old anger is in there. Old Mr. Indifference, he's in there too. Old Mr. Narcissism. You know, none of these are women. All my feminine qualities are much, much cooler and more well-adjusted. I gotta tell you, I'm just saying. Oh, but bless their hearts. What do? We must engage for a little while in an internal debate. Welcome to the Hardy White Examined Life Internal Debate. I'm your moderator, Hardy White, and tonight we are hearing from all the candidates for the position of dominant worldview. The rules tonight are simple. Each candidate will have a certain amount of minutes to say things, and then another candidate will say other things.
Candidates may answer questions asked of them or pose their own questions in the form of an answer, but with an uptalk inflection also known as a high-rising terminal. In the event a candidate asks a rhetorical question, the other candidates have an opportunity to answer it literally. There are no use of index cards, papers, or puppets allowed in the presentation, and if an answer is deemed too serious, a peanut will be thrown into the eye of the candidate to the left of the one speaking. Tonight's debate is sponsored by the mysterious forces who run everything. And now, without further saying things, let's meet our candidates. Mr. Butchie Spinoza, Mr. Lou Register, the Baron of Baltimore, and Don Bourgeoisie. Gentlemen, Butchie Spinoza won the toss, so he will give the opening statement.
Thank you, Hardy. My name is Butchie Spinoza, and I believe that I should dominate Hardy's worldview for the following reasons, which I have memorized in the form of a list and which, frankly, are meaningless but provocative. You people are going to eat them up. So here goes. No one wants to be a chump, right? In conclusion, I'm done.
Thank you, Butchie. Lou Register.
Thanks, Hardy. Friends, frankly, I'm angry. Why, you ask? That's probably part of it. Your incessant questions. Ever thought maybe I don't want to talk about it? Look, I don't like being frustrated and angry, but when I'm not, I don't take any action. And action is what inaction needs.
Thank you. Lord Baltimore.
Finally, we focus on what matters. Me. I am often asked, how do you do it, Baltimore? And I reply, I'm sorry I wasn't paying attention, because there's no way you could tell me anything about myself, since you have no idea of the greatness which I possess. I believe I'll stay with the one who brought me to the dance. Me. Who was it that said, self-love is the best love?
Nobody, I don't think.
Who would say that?
Don?
Yes. Will no one speak up for a complete and utter acquiescence to the will of others? I was always taught there are leaders and there are followers. The leaders must struggle through the headwinds and forge ahead into uncharted territory, while the followers can simply stay behind and cruise along with less effort. In racing, it's called drafting, I think. Let the leaders break the wind.
That's not the expression you want.
Whatever you say, no problem. That sounds good.
I will now pose our first question, and it's to Lou. Lou, you say anger is the answer. How can anger build bridges across cultural or other differences?
That's a good question. Here's an example. I get angry when I'm hungry, but I love Indian food, particularly vindaloo.
You're just saying that because of Red Dwarf.
What?
You watch that show and they mention chicken vindaloo and so you get a craving for it. That's how impressionable you are. That's the only reason you like it.
That's a lie. I've always liked Indian food.
No, it's because of British TV shows.
That is so uncool. I've been eating Indian food for forever. I just said vindaloo, but I could have said mutar paneer.
I doubt it.
Man, you suck so bad.
Whatever.
All right, your time's up. This question is for Don. Don, you witness a person being bullied. What do you do?
Whatever you think is best, Hardy.
No. What do you do?
What is everyone else doing?
Well, one person is being bullied, and one person is doing the bullying.
Are there others standing around minding their own business?
No, it's just you, the bullied, and the bully.
Why is the person being bullied?
Well, does that matter?
Yes. Suppose they're being bullied because they are a bully. Then it's an argument between two bullies, and it's none of my business.
Let's say they're being bullied because of their appearance.
I'm pretty sure my time is up.
No, not yet.
Now it must be.
No, you still have some time left.
Could you repeat the question a couple times?
Let's move on. Butchie, a man approaches you in a grocery store parking lot. He is disheveled and appears to be homeless. He asks for money to buy food. What do you do?
It's a con.
Explain.
It's a con. Most people are liars. I think the best way to help is by saying something like, you don't fool me, or try some other chump.
Well, let's say he isn't lying.
All right, give him a dollar. I won't stop you.
Baltimore. What would you do to fight injustice?
Well, I believe change starts in one's own heart. So perhaps settle down with a good book that has as its theme injustice.
make some hot tea or perhaps a cocktail and give myself the kind of attention that makes injustice impossible.
Well, I don't understand that, but all right. It's time now for closing statements. Butchie?
If you're not cynical, you're naive.
Lou?
If you're not angry, you're not paying attention.
Don?
I tend to agree.
Baltimore?
Shrink the world to the size of a clam, and then the world's your oyster.
Are these really our only choices?
Every time I step into a voting booth, and I gotta admit they're not booths anymore, every time I step around one of them tables with the little computer on it and little flywheel that I don't know how to use, I end up thinking it's a centipede machine like that. I look down at those names and I think, you know what? None of these people are really going to fulfill my needs. None of these people are really going to do what I think needs to be done, are they? And the more I depend on them, the less I'm going to do for myself, the less I'm going to solve problems. Oh, my goodness, this is absolutely the least I can do to participate in the community life of my community life. Communally. So I need to get out there and I need to do things a little more directly. And I think I will start with concentric circles. First, I am going to be in charge of myself. I take a little election, and I'm going to figure out my worldview. Then, I'm going to be in charge of my friends, not in charge, but I'm going to take responsibility for my friends and family. And I'm going to help them to my best of my ability. And I'm going to be engaged in their lives. I'm going to be there if they need me. And then I'm going to try to extend that to my whole neighborhood. This is a little more difficult because now these are people I don't know, and they're not necessarily people whose lives I've had influenced over, so they could believe things that are very different from what I believe, and that can be extremely annoying, especially if they like to tell me those opinions in an aggressive and unfriendly way. But I have to realize that, oh, I'm capable of doing the same thing, and I gotta suck it up a little bit, and I gotta stay in their circle. So they can see me. So they have to deal with me as a factor of their worldview. So, yeah, I'd like to get rid of all those people that look a certain way. I say, well, like me? Well, no, not you. Yeah, you're all right. You're one of the good ones. Yeah, you got to stay around and do that for me because that's the key. That's how you get into their soul. That's how you open it up. Is you make them look you in the eye. Say, yeah, if you hate those people, you got to hate me. And sometimes they can't do it. And you got to keep that influence growing. Now, a lot of people like to jump ahead. And they say, I want to have dominion over others. I want to run for the Senate. I want to be governor. When they can't even help their own families and own friends. You look at some people, their lives are a mess. They don't have peace in their homes and their families. Their families are a shambles because they haven't worked at it. Because they haven't been home, because they're out chasing their own ambitions. And those are the people that want to tell you what to do. I tell you what, how many times a day do I turn on the internet or the TV and I'm being scolded by some dysfunctional millionaire? Stop scolding me. I should be scolding you. You're the one with the problem. You're the one who's got to wear a top hat so that I know you have a brain. That's so silly. Well, I just can't do something noble. I'll recognize it. Believe me, when I see it, I know it. Now, all the, oh, some of you are so cynical. I'm so sorry. You look out there and say, oh, I understand politicians. I wouldn't trust any of them. Yeah, look at them now and say, which one of them would you really want to be with? Would you really want to say, oh, all right, I'll have a, not a beer with you, but, you know, do something together. Go to, I don't know, go strawberry picking or something like that in season. They say, well, none of them. Occasionally there's somebody, right? Oh, but then we accept that and we say, well, that's just going to be the way it is. I say, it doesn't have to be the way it is. You can change your heart and change others' hearts. Oh, and just keep trying. Oh, don't be discouraged. I'm here. I feel the same way. Hey, I'm lowly like you, and I'm going to stay that way. I promise you. I promise you the minute I have $1 million, I'll get rid of it. God, I don't want it. I don't want it. I want to survive and everything. I'm a little bit greedy, but I'm decided not to be a lot greedy. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in blessed Rockland County, and online at WFMU.org. I am so lucky you're with me. Oh, my friends. Oh, I consider you my friends. Even if you don't like me, I'll stay your friend in case you change your mind. I don't want to close any doors. All the doors are open here. The doors to Hardy's house, they don't have doors. They have those bead curtains. Oh, please come clinking through my bead curtain anytime. And I'll see you again next week.
I was standing. I was standing at the crossroads, and I thought I did. Do you know somehow I could not
Our scripture tonight gives us the subject, what's your brand? What's your brand? We live today in a world where people just strive off of brands. Amen. People like various types of brands or commodities of different things. Amen. Some folk like Ivory soap. Amen. While others like Zest soap. You can say amen tonight. Some folk like, amen, Camel cigarettes. While other folk like Coos. What's your brand tonight? Some folk like Maxwell House Coffee. While other folk like Sanka Coffee. Oh, we need an amen. Amen. Some folk like Beats Nut chewing gum. While other folk like Spearmint. Everybody has a brand. What's your brand tonight?